Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is the one, the only, Tawny Alvarez, partner and employment attorney with Verrill Dana. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. You know I always enjoy it.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I have to laugh. We've been laughing before the show. We're going to laugh on the show. That's what we do here. It's, you know, HR can be fun, folks. I know people don't believe that, but it can. It can be fun. We are going to be talking about a bunch of topics today. We're talking about management and the risk to them and the company. We're going to be talking about leaves. And I don't mean the kind in the fall. I mean actually FMLA, workers' compensation, paid sick leaves, yada, yada, yada. And we're going to make it entertaining. That's the key. That's
we what always we're make doing it entertaining. Today.
So I think what we'll start today is let's start with our managers, okay? You know, management's hard, Tawny. It really is because, you know, you have to think of everything all the time, everywhere, and it's really not about you. How do managers really look at how they're minimizing their risk?
I think a lot of times looking at it from the point of view of the employee. So when we say it's not all about you, that's absolutely correct. I think that's a foundational element of it. How would you want to be treated if you were an employee? If you were an employee, how do you continue to maintain and respect the policies and practices that your organization has in place, but also to allow the employee to have dignity and respect in the workplace? I think that foundationally is the most important aspect of being a good manager.
Yeah, so we're talking about obviously making sure that others are taken care of. Of course, there's an argument to be made if you don't take care of yourself first, then you can't take care of others. It's the old, you know, put your mask on before you can help others. In preparing for that, in saying, hey, I need to prepare and make sure that I take care of myself, it's really about knowledge, right? About gaining knowledge and understanding. What are some of the resources and things that people have to think about all the time when you're a manager that maybe people don't think about all the time?
Yeah, I think there's a multitude of different things out there, and it's looking at your emotional intelligence. I think that's something that people don't think about all the time, recognizing that people accept and understand information in different formats. You might be a visual learner, and accordingly, you want to see all the policies and practices written down. But other people might be oral learners or visual learners, or they might need to be doing something in order to really grasp some of these concepts. So recognizing, especially with disciplinary issues, when someone's not performing to your expectations, looking at them and saying, what can we do to help this information stick? And recognizing that it might not just be reading a policy manual, even though that works for you. So I think one of the resources is finding out more about how people learn, because as a manager, you're responsible for making sure people understand what they're supposed to be doing. There's great training programs out there and available. I mean, not to give your company a plug, but Dale Carnegie has a number of really great training programs out there. There's great books, if that's more up a manager's alley. And then there's just experience, watching the people around you, watching other managers, having a good mentor and not being afraid to go to that mentor and say, this is what I'm experiencing. How would you deal with that?
You know, it's interesting. I remember back when I used to work for PacSun just a few years ago, we'll just say that, there was a head of HR. Her name was Donna Pizer, and she came from Disney. And she really said something when we first met her and she was introducing herself, and she talked about the fact that you're always on stage as a manager. No matter what you're doing, no matter where you are, on site, off site, everywhere you go, you're always being watched for what you do and being judged for what you do, because people will watch you even when you don't think you're being watched. And I think that's what you're talking about, right? Knowing that the knowledge that you're gaining from others is not only what you see, but what you value and take in.
Absolutely. do as I do, not as I say. I mean, if you're saying one thing, and let's use sexual harassment, I think that's a great example of it. You're saying, you know, this is our policy, this is our practice, we don't sexually harass in this workplace, and then you're, you know, you're making an off-color joke. It's it happens. That's what we see managers doing all the time. And not just that, but I think one of the other really interesting concepts is that saying it's lonely at the top. As a manager, you bind the organization. What you do has consequences, which means that when you're frustrated with this job, or when you don't like the way even higher level managers are treating things or how they're responding to problems, you do not have the prerogative to go to some of your subordinates and start complaining about those things. And it's lonely at the top.
Yeah, it really is. I hear it from executives all the time. They struggle at times to be themselves, right? Because maybe outside of work, they're a little more relaxed, a little more loose in what they say, but they recognize that what they say, what they do, how they act affects the organization and can affect their job in the end, right? That they can actually lose their job over something so flippant as a quick comment or a gesture or a thought. And that sometimes can be a struggle for managers to understand.
Absolutely. Or even let's take it outside of the work environment. So you're in a place where you arguably don't have any responsibility. You're at home. You're doing your own thing, right? Maybe you've had a couple drinks. Maybe you're sober and you post something online that's a little off color. That's going to have consequences internally, most likely. And understanding that even though you're on your own time, the things that you do on your own time also potentially could have consequences at work.
Yeah, I mean, it really has become that way. And I think that's what I want to talk a little bit about today next, is that, you know, something as simple as harassment or simple as discrimination or wage and hour are all areas that managers sometimes, there's a gray line, I guess, not a black and white line sometimes. It's a lot of gray. And managers just sometimes don't understand how simple it is to cross that line. And again, part of the answer really is that line does move at times.
Always. And oftentimes it depends on the person at issue, where the line is. Is that fair? No, life isn't fair, though. So let's not use fairness as a discussion in any of this.
But they do.
They do.
You say don't use it, but let's be real. They do.
If there's a manager out there who hasn't had an employee say that isn't fair, you know, they're new to the game.
Yeah, that's right. Or they haven't managed long, right? Or they haven't managed a lot of people, because I guarantee you, they always say it isn't fair. And you're right, life isn't fair. So let's go down a couple of those areas we talked about. Let's first talk about wage and hour. You know, people get paid differently.
I do.
Really?
Yeah, I even advise on those types
of
things.
Oh my God, people make different amounts of money?
They make different amounts of money for different types of work.
They have different types of benefits?
Different benefits, different bonus structures.
No, they say it ain't so.
And wait until they start talking about them.
Yeah, well, it's the way it is. Wait till we find out that, hey, man, people can talk. And you can't stop them from talking.
You can't stop anyone from talking as much as we'd like to try.
Yeah, duct tape only works sometimes. Not all the time. They can break it. It comes through. Yep, I'm a big fan of duct tape. Anyways, having said that, people do get paid differently. And pay equity has become a buzzword. It's there are laws popping up everywhere. You can look at Massachusetts locally. New Hampshire's talking about it. Maine's talking about it. California's talking about Colorado's. I mean, I can go down the line. Let's talk a little bit about that, what that really is all about, and what really pay equity is.
Yeah. So pay equity is this concept that you get paid the same amount of money for the same amount of work if you have the same skills and abilities. So if it's on a production basis, a man and a woman producing the same amount of widgets should be paid at the same rate of pay, unless one person creating a widget has been creating widgets for 40 years longer and thus can create a much more complicated widget. So there's a ton of different elements when we're talking about pay equity. It's not just about, hey, here's a man and a woman with the same job title, let's make sure they get paid the same. No, there's a lot more to it. And the problem is that you run into rogue managers who really like the people under them, or who have a friendship or believe someone has more potential, and to keep that person in the organization, maybe they offer them a little bit more than they would someone else. Or maybe, let's say someone applies for the position and they negotiate a higher salary, right? When you have two people come into the organization with the same skills and abilities, the same previous level of experience in the industry, who are going to be doing the same job, and you offer both of them $40,000, and the male negotiates and says, no, I won't take less than $43,000, and the woman says, I'm so excited to be here, when do I start? You have an issue, because you now have a man making $43,000, a woman making $40,000. They have the same skills and abilities. They're going to be performing the same job. Moving forward, there's not just going to be that $3,000 gap, but likely you're going to see, raises in the future. You're going to see cost of living increases. There could be bonuses attached to it. And it's just going to continue to snowball generally. So one of the purposes of pay equity laws is to attempt to minimize any of that kind of effect kind of moving forward.
Now, let's talk about some real life, right? So people get hired at different times. The economy is roaring right now. We're watching pay rates go up daily for different jobs. People are commanding much more right now than they were. And you have internal people who have been there for a period of time. They may not have the same experience. They may have different experience. That really causes a big challenge for employers who are kind of a little bit over barrel with the fact that they have to hire at a higher rate now. And maybe it's a dollar more. Let's use it simple numbers, a dollar more. Does that mean that they have to give everybody in that job a dollar raise?
It depends. I mean, don't
you
love...
There we go.
First lawyer answer.
The lawyer answer has come out.
I mean, it only took us 10 minutes for me to get
good.
It out. it depends. I mean, it depends on whether or not they have the same skills and abilities, whether or not they've been in the industry for the same period of time. What type of work are they going to be doing? I mean, if we're talking about cashiers at a retail location who are going to do the same type of work, who have the same level of retail experience, you may have to increase wages of kind of everyone in the organization, or be able to differentiate why someone is getting a higher rate of pay. It could be that if you have a location in Bangor and you have a location in Portland, that you're able to explain why there's a difference in the rate of pay. If they're both in the same retail location, that becomes a lot tougher.
Well, you know, one of the things, as you know, we do is a lot of compensation work, and we have been very busy in the compensation area for just this reason, is the fact that trying to get a balance of what a job and level is so that you can equitably go across the board and make that work has been a challenge for some organizations. Family businesses face this challenge a lot. We see it a lot when, you know, Bob's the brother-in-law, and Bob has this type of rate of pay, and, well, Phil is not part of the family, and Phil has a different rate of pay, but does the same thing as Bob, right? But they'll say, well, that's part of the family.
The good thing about that is at least we're talking about Bob and Phil, right? The problem becomes is if we're talking about Bob and Phyllis. So, in part, they're going to have to show a different, or if Bob and Phil are of different races or ethnicity, right? Those are the protected classes that we're going to start really becoming concerned with, or maybe different sexual orientation in some situations may provide protections. But understanding that, you know, family alone, maybe if we're looking at equals, could be paid more. Is it ideal? No. Is it going to create some risk? Absolutely. But less risk than if it was based off of some other protected class generally. And I think this goes back to this difficult concept. And I know our listeners, whether or not you're a business owner, whether or not you are simply in HR, you've got a lot on your plate already right now. And the thought of performing some type of wage and hour audit, some pay equity audit, is a lot. It's a big task.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's not something that you're going to get done. It's not a 10-hour project. It's not a 40-hour project. If you have the right foundation, I mean, maybe you could make it into a 40-hour project, but I haven't seen an organization yet that it's that time.
No, going back through the records takes time. And logging it all, characterizing it. You may have a, you know, an ATS system that can pull some of that together, but most of those are relatively new. So if you have to go back to the beginning, and what is the statute of limitations on that?
So that's state dependent. So it's really going to depend on the state and what the statute says specifically. I mean, and it also depends on whether or not the state puts the statute under their discrimination laws or under their wage and hour laws. So best practices, I'd say, is likely to go back 6 years and take a look at it. But again, it's going to be state jurisdiction specific.
We're talking with Tony Alvarez, partner and employment attorney with Verrill Dana. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, general manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is the one, the only, Tony Alvarez, partner and employment attorney with Verrill Dana. By the way, Verrill Dana is a great sponsor of the HR Power Hour. You could be one, too. Just let me know. Anyways, that's my best sales pitch of the day, Deb. Look at that. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Talking to our producer, Debbie Davis, who's over there giggling in the corner, but it's okay. We're having fun here today. We're talking with Tony about managing managers, the risks that your managers pose to your company, and how you can lessen those. So let's talk about, we've been talking about wage and hour. I think one of the other things that comes up is overtime. And, of course, we're talking overtime for non-exempt hourly personnel. Overtime, you know, it's only 5-10 minutes.
5-10 minutes a day, five days a week, 52 weeks a year, 6 years. See how quickly I get to $500,000.
Yeah, it's only $500,000.
It's only half. It's only, and then guess what?
You times
get to,
three?
You get to pay me.
Yeah.
You get to pay plaintiff's counsel. You get to travel it.
That sounds great. Okay, so 5 minutes matters.
5 minutes. 5 minutes matters. I mean, you're going to hear some people who are going to argue with you and say it's de minimis time, Tani. It's nothing, right? De minimis time would be something that is in that 5 minute range, 2 or 3 minutes. The problem is 2 or 3 minutes every day. That's no longer de minimis. It's very quickly 15, 20 minutes a week, right? So if it's de minimis in the idea of, hey, it's three minutes every 2 weeks, it's a harder argument for an employee to make that they're entitled to wages for that time. But if it's a couple minutes a day, every single day, it very quickly adds up.
Well, you know, let's talk about somebody who says, okay, I worked 40 hours this week. Next week, I worked 40 hours and maybe 20 minutes. And then the week after that, I only worked 39 hours and a half. Can I just merge the two? I get paid biweekly.
No, you can't merge the two. So this is the important part and one of the aspects when I'm doing handbook review that so often I see missing is in the handbook, it doesn't identify what a work week is. People are like, Tawny, everyone knows what a work week is. Well, yeah, it's a 7-day period. Each day has 24 hours. But when does your work week start and end? And they're like, well, Tawny, it always starts on Sunday. Well, it doesn't have to start on Sunday, right? You could start your work week on Wednesday. You could start your work week on Monday. Decide when you want that time period to start and end. And the reason why you need a start time, a specific time, 12:01 a.m. on Mondays, right, is because you need to be able to identify whether or not in that 1 week period, 40 hours were worked, because that's what's important. It's not what the pay period is. The pay period is important because people need to know when they're going to have money and when they're going to run out of money. But they need to specifically know what the timeline is in which we're going to count whether or not overtime is important. So both what the pay week is or pay period is, whether or not that's weekly, biweekly, monthly, and also what a work week is important, because you can't take half an hour of overtime that you worked in week one of the month and say, okay, we're going to take that extra half an hour and we're going to put it towards week four of the month. It's based off of each month. So if half an hour extra time is worked in week one, we need to pay it time and a half. And if only 39 and a half hours are worked in week four, they don't get a full 40 hours of pay.
So somebody takes their lunch and they say, well, the phone rings in the middle of the lunch and they're eating at their desk and they pick up that call. And it takes a few minutes and they hang up and they don't necessarily clock back in for that 2-minute conversation. And maybe another call comes in during their lunchtime. They happen to pick it up and take the call, and it's another 2 minutes. And you see how simple this becomes, as you know. And this happens sporadically during a week, right? And it just hey, it's only a call. It only took a minute. You know, talk to us about that, because I see that happen all the time.
Are you ready to mark down time number two where I say it depends?
Yes.
It depends, David.
I have it checked. Number two.
So it's going to depend on a number of things. The state in which you're operating is going to be the first thing that it depends on. Second thing it's going to depend on is how many hours has that individual been scheduled to work that day? More than six, less than six. If it's more than six in the state of Maine or in the state of Massachusetts, you'd be entitled to half an hour of unpaid time off for eating. Of some sort, right? Or you could not eat. No one forces you to eat, I promise you. I mean, as an employer, you can do lots of things. Forcing someone to eat just isn't there.
Just
yet.
Isn't one of them?
Yeah, okay. Not yet. We'll see.
I'm it's sure. Possible. Be careful.
We will
be careful what you wish for.
We may get there. So during that half hour of unpaid break, that individual should be performing absolutely no task. Now, you're going to say to me, well, what if I pay them for that break, right, Tawny? What happens if it's a half hour of paid lunch? So you're still technically in violation of the statute because you're supposed to give them a whole break, a whole half hour without performing any type of work at all. The issue becomes, however, is that, like, what is their, what's their loss? What are the damages that they've sustained as a result of picking up the phone those couple of times when we paid them? Not a huge issue. The bigger issue is when you have unpaid lunch breaks, right? Where you take it out of their, you don't make them clock in and out, but you indicate on when they're hired that it's a 38.5 hour work week, right? Because you're taking out that half hour lunch. If they're working for those 2 minutes or picking up the phone at any time, you need to be paying them for that whole half an hour, or you need to pull them out of that chair and make sure they take half an hour off at some point during that shift.
What if somebody doesn't want to take a break? And my understanding is in some states, you're allowed to sign off that you don't want that break.
You can have a waiver, and we highly suggest it, especially in certain industries, the hospitality industry being one of them, specifically with regards to wait staff. Wait staff likely in many organizations are going to say, I don't want to take a break because if I take a break, I'm going to lose a table. Or who's going to take care of my table if I take a break and we have people seated? All of those issues. In those situations, we highly recommend having, it's called a break waiver. And it's a one page, it could be half a page, a quarter of a page document that literally says, I recognize under state law that I'm entitled to a meal break of half an hour. I'm choosing to waive that half hour meal break. I can revoke this waiver at any time. You have the employee sign and date in, you put it in their personnel file, making sure that they understand that they can revoke it at any time and be entitled to that break. Now, that's very state specific. You can do it in Maine, you can do it in Massachusetts. It's something that if you're operating outside of those jurisdictions, you're going to want to speak to a lawyer to find out whether or not a waiver is going to be valid in your state, or whether or not there's even a lunch break or a meal break statute that you need to worry about.
A couple of things that come up with wage and hour. People say, hey, you know, I have a policy that says if you don't work before a holiday, you know, the day before you call out, you don't get the holiday pay. Are those still legal?
It's, again, state specific. But yeah, here in Maine, even in most industries, I'm going to say most industries in Massachusetts, because there are some specific exceptions to that, that you don't have to, you don't have to do extra pay for a holiday. You don't have to do double time on a holiday. You don't have to provide any paid holidays at all. That's a quote unquote benefit of employment, but it's not a requirement of being an employer, no matter how big or small you are.
People also ask about, I'm asking just general questions here, a bereavement leave, or we're going to talk about leaves in a few minutes, but bereavement leave or things like that, those are not required either by law, correct?
No, bereavement leave isn't. Some things that are required by law would be domestic assault leave. If you are the victim of domestic assault and or you have an employee who has a domestic assault that's occurring within their family, whether a child or a parent, you must provide them, it doesn't have to be paid leave, but the opportunity to take leave in order to deal with elements surrounding that, whether or not it's court proceedings, talking to the police, getting mental health counseling. In some situations, it could also include kind of moving out of the situation or those type of things. You don't have to pay for that time, but you can't discriminate or take adverse action against a person as a result of them taking that leave. Similarly, armed forces leaves are going to be another category of leave that's going to provide protection from a statutory standpoint, and that oftentimes is outside of what you think about as an organization and say, well, I need to have so-and-so here. If they don't show up, I don't care why they don't show up. They don't have any paid time off. Well, I understand that, but even if you're a four-person organization, there still could be some reasons where you're not going to be able to fire them as a result of them not showing up, as long as they've given you notice. I mean, one way we could come back to it is that if someone just doesn't show up and doesn't tell you why they're not showing up, your lack of knowledge, you're not a mind reader. And that's one of the things that we find, I think, in this industry to be so frustrating, is it's an after-the-fact acknowledgement of why they were unable to cover their shift or why they were late or those type of things. Let us know beforehand. Like, let us know what's going on so that we can work with you.
If it was just that simple, right? It's just one of the challenges that employers face is that people just don't show up and they get very frustrated because they can't either terminate them right away or they, you know, and most employers don't want to terminate people. I know, especially right now in the market today, nobody wants to terminate anybody. But the reality is that communication between management and employees really can be detrimental to everybody across you and the organization itself.
Absolutely. And I mean, what you accept from one employee needs to be what you're going to accept from other employees as well. So if you accept not being notified as to why someone's not in work or will be late, be ready to have that same expectation of other people's, because you're setting a precedent moving forward as to what you will accept or what is appropriate in the workplace.
What's it? Inspect what you expect, right? Isn't that one of the old sayings out there? Inspect what you expect. Okay, I'm dating myself. We move on.
We're throwing around these sayings like it's going out of style.
Well, but and that's a saying too. It's going out of style. You know, what is it? Somebody said the other day, they said, "Ah, it's like a Rolodex." And one of my younger team members went, "Uh-huh." And I went, "Never mind. Just never mind." It's like a database, right? A database, okay? Oh, I get that. Yeah.
Right now, though, in your mind, are you hearing it flipping? The little sound of it, how it would, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then depending on how full it was, like you could tell how full someone's Rolodex was based off of the sound it was making as it was turning. Like,
how round it was, how big and tall and thick and wide. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so you're listening to the HR Power Hour from 1973, and we're talking to you live about Rolodexes, which if you haven't ever experienced a Rolodex, you don't know what you're missing. I do remember them well, scarily. All right, so let's talk again about management. And we've talked a lot about harassment issues, and many times we've talked about sexual harassment issues. So I'm not going to beleaguer the point, but what are just a couple of the things that managers need to be looked for without going into a lot of depth on it? What are the key things for them to be focused on?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to just do a whole episode of saying, see something, say something. I mean, to me, that's so... New York did a great job with that whole campaign, but it really applies to the employer-employee situation. It's making sure that your managers, if they see anything, that they say something, because their knowledge is the knowledge of the organization. So if they see someone make an inappropriate joke, they need to pull that person aside and be like, hey, I know you thought that was funny, but it's not cool, and it can't happen here. They need to recognize, just as we talked about at the beginning of the show, that they can't make the jokes, right? They can't laugh at the jokes. It might be hilarious. It might be something that you would laugh about at home, but when you laugh about it, that's going to make everyone else a little bit uncomfortable and make them feel like they need to laugh about it as well, or they're not part of the club, or that they're going to be looked at poorly by you. So recognizing those things, and then it goes back to exactly what we said. Treat people the way you want to be treated. There's going to be certain situations where, unfortunately, you're going to have to call the person out in front of their colleagues, right? There's going to be other situations where it's going to be way more appropriate to just pull the person aside afterwards and be like, hey, I know everyone laughed and it seemed funny, but you can't keep doing it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM. We've been talking with Tawny Alvarez, partner of employment attorney with Verrill Dana. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs and ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Tawny Alvarez, partner and employment attorney with Verrill Dana. We're talking about managing our managers and the responsibility regarding leaves. You know, Tawny, I was thinking to myself as we were talking about managing managers. And by the way, the thought I was thinking about to myself is another whole conversation. But I was thinking about when I first started as a manager and how I really wish I knew more and didn't have to learn so much on the fly.
You've been giving me so many opportunities for a joke, and I haven't jumped in on any of them. So I'm going to let you keep going.
That's good. But training today has become so critical to lowering the ramp up of manager experience, right? Because ideally it is true. There's nothing like on the grounds, hands on, in-person manager experience. There's nothing like it, because all the theory that you learn in school, all the theory that they tell you, all the stuff we say sounds great until the first person goes, no, that doesn't work for me. And it doesn't. So how do we take and lessen the challenges that managers face and really get them this information.
I love hypotheticals. I love putting managers in a room with hypotheticals. I mean, I know we talk about trust falls and the importance of those type of things, but the interesting aspect is we learn so much about people. Being a manager is understanding people, and you're going to have such a multitude of circumstances that you're managing. You're going to have your pessimistic Pete. You're going to have your negative Nancy. You're going to have your happy-go-lucky, I'm just happy to be alive person who's never going to tell you that they're not happy in their job, that so-and-so is making their life more difficult, that they're actually doing the work of the whole entire team, and they're fine doing it because they're happy to have the job, right? Knowing and recognizing all these different personalities and how to manage them is so important. And other than truly reading a ton of psychology books and being able to recognize all these different living and working with these type of people, recognizing that the world doesn't revolve around you, which to me is a starting point. The world does not revolve around you. I understand. And it's something I tell myself all the time. Tawny. David's like, you do not, Tawny. Tawny, the world does not revolve around you, but it's recognizing that my perception of what's happening is not the same as my colleague's perception. And every time something doesn't go the way I expected it to, the way I wanted it to, stepping back and saying that. So I find that having that discussion initially with managers helps to put everything else in context.
Well, you know, it is. We are talking about the liability, the risk, right, to an organization from managers. And you certainly can get insurances that are out there. There's D&O insurance for directors and officers. There's employee liability insurance, EPLI. There's just owner's insurance. Can't think of it right now, the name of their business and your liability insurance. There's plenty of insurances to protect you as an owner or as a business. But anything you can do to lessen the amount of bad acts that a manager would do or mistakes that they make really will make a difference in the organization.
Absolutely. Putting the right people into management positions is so important. I mean, I don't want you just to put people into those positions because operationally they're good at their job, right? That is the worst thing you can do is say someone operationally is great at what they do. Let's make them a manager. I promise you that you are just going to make them more unhappy because they're not going to get to do what they're good at. And you're going to make the people who are reporting to them unhappy too because they don't have a skill set to manage a team.
There's no question. People think sometimes they want to be a manager because they've done everything that they can do in that job and they're really good. But people are often surprised when production drops, right? Sales drop.
Absolutely.
Because that person then suddenly is in charge of a team and has no idea how to manage that team.
Absolutely. And if we look historically at what a corporate hierarchy looks like, right, depending on whether or not you come from a traditional organization in which there is a true kind of ladder or hierarchy, normally rungs on that ladder are going to include oversight of other individuals, right? In part, the organization might not have a deep enough bench. It might make most amount of sense for operationally to make sure that your managers understand the operational aspects of the things that people are doing. The problem is that if you're putting people in management positions who either have no desire to manage, no desire to learn how to manage, and are just doing it because they like the increased rate of pay, operationally you're going to suffer as an organization.
Tawny, we said at the beginning we'd be talking about some of the leaves that managers have to deal with. And my gosh, as the years have moved on, the number of leaves have continued to increase. But let's talk about some basic ones here. FMLA, or Family Medical Leave Act. Why is that something that a manager has to be concerned about?
It's going to be something that oftentimes is brought up in conversation generally. Maybe Bob comes in and says, Sally, his wife, is pregnant. We're expecting X, Y, and Z day. Oh, congratulations. That's so wonderful. We're so happy for you. Manager moves along with their day-to-day, right? If you're an organization that's covered by the Family Medical Leave Act, you just had a notification of a qualifying event, and you, within 7 days, should be getting that individual certain pieces of paper, letting them know of what their rights and responsibilities are under the Family Medical Leave Act, making sure that certain paperwork is completed so that they can take protected leave if and when the baby does arrive. So those type of issues, and making sure your managers are able to identify situations in which protected leave could attach.
We also have workers' compensation leave.
So often, I laugh about this. We'll hear later in a story, because I always hear the story later. I never get a real-time experience of any of this, which just means that everyone's side of the story is a little bit different. And it's, yeah, no, I absolutely saw her trip, and she cried, and we got her a Band-Aid, and all was good. And you look at the manager and be like, but she was working, right? Yeah. You know what workers' comp is? Yeah, but that's for, like, when you're really injured, like you lose a finger. I was like, well, actually, it's not just for losing a finger. Like, it's for when you experience a back issue. It's for when you twist an arm. It's for, you know, when you put the box above your head and someone says, oh, I think I pulled something, right? That moment when someone says, oh, I think I pulled something. Again, that's another date and time in which we have a certain period of time to provide notice to our workers' comp insurance provider, which I know we all have, right?
Yes.
And then after that, finding out what our obligations, if any, are. Maybe they need to go to Concentra or whoever your provider is to have an initial exam. Maybe your employee is going to say, no, I threw it out playing baseball 3 months ago, right? Fine, but we don't know what they're going to say later down the line. Let's make sure that we've documented it some way.
How about paid sick leaves?
Paid sick leave is going to be a state issue. I mean, as of the recording right now, and it's so hard to say this, it's not a federal issue. It might be a federal issue at some time in the future, within the next year. I'd be surprised if it's within the next year. Next 5 years, we might see it. But right now, it's a state issue, and you need to be paying really close attention because these state sick leave laws, and even local, I mean, you're seeing it at a local level unless you're living in a jurisdiction where the state has said local jurisdictions can't take on this issue. But you have to be aware. You have to be looking at the news, listening, because it's changing and evolving so quickly.
ADA, American with Disabilities Act.
What we have here is a situation in which people forget that the Americans with Disabilities Act falls within so many of these other types of leaves.
Sure does.
So it's part of the Family Medical Leave Act. It's part of workers' compensation. It's part of paid sick leave, depending on what the leave's being taken for. So understanding the importance of kind of how all of these laws work together and, hey, FMLA leave is over. You've used up your 12 weeks, right? Bam, get back to work. You can't get back to work, you're fired. Whoa, we probably have an ADA accommodation issue that we're going to need to deal with if it's the person's own serious health condition.
You know, there are other state protected and non-medical leaves. What are those?
Yeah, those are going to be some of the ones that we touched on earlier, just a little bit. Stuff like leave to care for military family members, leave for the military, leave for domestic violence assault. There's firefighter and paramedic leaves. All of those different kind of leaves that aren't going to apply to all of your employees, but could apply to certain specific ones that you just should be aware of generally and have an idea as to red flags. In most situations, having our managers have knowledge of all those things isn't hugely important. If you're a small enough organization, hopefully your HR team has an understanding of each of the employees enough to identify places where there's risk, but still making sure that they understand so that they can come to you and talk to you about it.
One of the things that always comes up and managers get confused on sometimes is somebody calls out sick or somebody calls out second day sick and they're questioning, when can I ask for a doctor's note? When can I, when can I do something about this? What's the typical answer? And yes, I know it depends. That's number three. I wrote it down for you.
Yeah, it depends. So you can have a policy that says 3 days out and we'll need a doctor's note, right? The problem is when you have a policy like that, recognize that there's going to be situations in which you're not going to be able to abide by it. Situations such as intermittent FMLA leave, right? Where you're already aware that the person may need to be out of work a couple days a month or for a week here and there, right? You're not going to be able to keep asking for a doctor's note each time. You can have policies or practices in place that say if you're out for 3 days or more, we require a doctor's note to return. It's more difficult to say If you're out for 3 days, we require a fitness for duty exam upon return. Depending on the job that's at issue, though, that may make sense. Also, it could depend on the type of industry you're in and why the person was out. In certain situations, however, 3 days or more could be an FMLA qualifying event, and getting more information about why they're out. Interestingly enough, I've seen so many cases that start off one way. I was out for 3 days because my kid was sick, but come to find out, I was out for 3 days because I pulled my back doing X, Y, and Z, with an evolution of the story. So often people are like, I don't want to know any information about someone's health at all. I get that, but it's important to at least have a basic understanding as to whether or not they were sick, whether or not it was a personal, family, dramatic situation, or something more.
Well, I think that's one thing that has changed over the years, in which HR has said, and management has said, we don't want to really know. I don't want to know. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. But in an effort to focus on caring management, management that actually care about your well-being, there has been a shift in that, and people are more sharing of that information, whether it be on social media or just in general. So I think there is a line that is different today. This is that gray line I talked about earlier, where people are willing to share more with their supervisors, their boss, the owners. And there's not a lot you can do about that.
No, there's not. There's times where a very simple conversation, maybe about a migraine, turns into, you know, a history of cancer in the family, and the fact that they think, you know, that they have something more than just a migraine, where in a lot of situations you might just have to sit there and listen, and now you've gotten more protected information that you really didn't want, right? It's recognizing and making sure that you're clear with the employee both beforehand and afterwards, where you say, like, thank you for letting us know, kind of, this is what we need from you moving forward, and going from there. Also, those type of conversations oftentimes are best had by someone in HR and not a direct manager. So if a manager starts having that conversation and gets all this information, the best thing to do is to then have a discussion with that manager and say, listen, I know during the time you thought you were doing everything right. We appreciate you getting the information you did. In the future, best practices is going to be for you to come to us and let us know this, and us being HR, so that we can find out some more information and you can continue to manage the team.
Yeah, it's also their confidentiality part, right? Because that becomes so critical that they don't tell anyone.
Absolutely. If they're not sharing information, if they either are sharing information with the wrong people because they just want to get it off their chest, I can't believe so-and-so told me X, Y, and Z, or if they don't tell anyone because they just forget or don't think it's important, we've got a problem either way. It's usually best to bring HR in right at the beginning.
We're talking with Tawny Alvarez, partner and employment attorney with Errol Dana. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we've been talking with Tawny Alvarez, partner, employment attorney with Errol Dana. We'll be talking about the legal risks to being a manager, managing managers, responsibility regarding leaves. We've been having more fun than we should.
Oh, no. This is exactly as much fun as we should always have.
You know, Tawny, it's, as we wrap up the show today, you know, I was thinking to myself, you obviously, as an attorney, hear great stories. And there are surely one or two that you could think of, at least maybe one real good one that we could end the show on, about, you know, a lesson learned by a manager that might have been better had they learned earlier.
Let's go back to kind of what we were talking about earlier, and I think that's a big part of it. So I had a situation once in which, and we litigated this issue, the employer did not ask for any additional information when someone called in. It was just, I can't come in. And then suddenly it was, I can't come in because I don't have a babysitter for my child's kids. Then it was, I can't come in because my child was arrested and I need to take care of my grandchildren, right? And it kept devolving. Now, the problem is a decision had been made to terminate before these leaves had come down, but they didn't put it in writing. There wasn't a piece of paper that said, okay, she didn't show up for this shift. She was a no-call, no-show. We're terminating, right? Come to find out, none of these things she alleges were really happening. She was having women's issues. We later find out, right? And she then alleges that after her leave, we terminated her as a result of this health condition, right? The problem was, is recreating the timeline in a situation like this as to when the termination decision was made, whether or not it was before or after we gained knowledge about this medical issue. It cost them a lot of money to pay me to recreate a timeline to figure out who knew what when. Instead of when the decision to terminate was made, putting it down saying, today we decided to terminate. So when you decide to terminate, write an email to someone that says, we decided to terminate because of the last no-call, no-show.
And we're going to terminate the show on that note. Donnie, as always, it's a pleasure having you in. And we really appreciate being a great sponsor of the show as well.
Thank you, David. It's wonderful to be here.
You're going to listen to the HR Power Hour Tip of the Week next by Viral Dana, and we'll be right back. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by ViralDana.com.
How much information do you give out when getting calls checking references? Hi, I'm Ben Ford from Viral Dana's Labor and Employment Law Group. Most companies have a policy restricting the amount of information given about former employees when any prospective employers call for references. Why is that? Is there anything to be afraid of? The answer is yes. Giving a negative reference can generate a claim of defamation if the information is not true. But even if the information is true, you and your company would be placed in a position to prove that the negative information was true. This can get very expensive. But the biggest concern is a claim for retaliation. A former employee subject to a bad reference can claim that you gave the bad reference in retaliation for some other form of protected activity they engaged in before they left the company. Again, it may be totally bogus, but lawsuits are very expensive. The other reason not to give out job performance information is the almost total lack of benefit to the company. By giving out job performance information, you are taking on a big risk but seeing no benefit in return. Questioning your own job reference policies? Give Viral Dana a call.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by ViralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, our guest is Brian Bouchard, employment attorney with Sheehan Finney. We're going to be talking about responding to off-duty and online conduct. I mean, the big question is, can an employee be disciplined or fired for off-duty conduct? The answer, on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.